Washington, Court of Appeals, Division 1, which is now in session. The Honorable Stephen J. Dwyer.
Go ahead and be seated, everybody. First up is State versus Rogers.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Jared Steed appearing on behalf of the appellant, William Rogers. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. Over 2 days of trial in this case, Rogers' children, friend, and love interest testified they believed in their head, their heart, and their gut that Rogers was guilty of murdering his wife.
Did they actually say that?
They did, Your Honor.
Did they express concern about whether he was the cause of her death?
Yes, Your Honor, that is our
position.
Did
they ever say that they thought that he murdered her?
Well, they're indicating that they don't...
Did they ever say that they thought that he'd murdered her?
They didn't use the term murder, no,
okay.
Your Honor.
And didn't Rogers admit that he was the cause of her death?
Rogers, after the fact, the main issue at trial, yes, concerned
so
is...
So he admitted he was the cause of her death?
Yes.
And so their testimony was that they agreed with him?
That they agreed with him before...
That he was the cause of their death?
Before that evidence had come out.
So it was an uncontested issue at trial.
It was uncontested in the respect that it was not objected to.
Well, it was uncontested, and it was an uncontested fact. He agreed that he caused her death.
Correct.
And they said that they indicated that they thought he had caused her death.
They testified that what Rogers said regarding what happened and what the outcome was something that they did not believe.
And the effect of that was to show that they thought he caused...
Correct. That is the point. Yes,
which everybody agreed with. Well,
sure.
It's a point because he testified to it, or what's...
The point here is
what's
that...
What's wrong with agreeing with him?
The problem here is that agreeing with him over multiple days of trial, several witnesses, children love, and friend interest here, undercuts the idea that witnesses can't create improper opinion testimony.
Well, didn't he say that what he had told them at the beginning wasn't true?
He told the... treatment provider, the evaluator, that, you know, the initial stories that he had told about what had transpired was not entirely true. That's
and
correct.
Did the jury hear that?
The jury did.
So he gave reason, did he not, as to why he had changed his mind?
He did. I mean, he gave several reasons. One was that, he wasn't quite sure what happened because of this issue surrounding this mental aspect, and then he also wanted to get his children home in time to say his goodbyes.
And wasn't there an alternative explanation about why he might have changed his mind?
Well, the alternative explanation is the problem here, which would be that...
He didn't think his family and friends believed him.
Correct, which is...
Why can't they present testimony on that issue? It's an issue at trial.
Well, the issue is not that they can't present testimony on that issue, Your Honor. The issue is how that testimony was presented in this case. Here we have
How would you present testimony that... I didn't believe what he told me, and that's an explanation for why he changed his story.
Well, Montgomery in that line of cases makes clear that the appropriate way to testify about an observation is to say something to the, you know, based, I witnessed this and
this
consistent.
This isn't an observation, though. That's where your disconnect is. This is an explanation for future conduct. He knew that his kids didn't believe him.
But that's not what the state presented this evidence as. It wasn't presented as this is the basis for which this testimony is coming in, as a basis to refute the fact that the children may or may not believe.
What difference does that make?
Well, I think that goes to the whole purpose behind the, you know, prohibition against improper opinion testimony.
If a lawyer, through dumb luck, gets evidence in for the right reason, do we reverse?
Under certain circumstances, absolutely, Your Honor.
Why
yes.
would we do that? If it's proper evidence... And it's properly in the case. Why do we care what the lawyer's motivation was?
Because
we're looking at the behavior of the judge. The judge lets something in that's perfectly proper to come in. If it's to address why he came up with a vastly different explanation at trial from what he did immediately after her death.
Well,
I mean, you've got a guy, his two kids, his mistress, and his best friend all indicate skepticism at his explanation. After seeing that, he totally changes his story at trial. You would have that barred?
I would, under the facts of this case, absolutely, Your Honor. Because, again, our point is not that this was properly presented. This is evidence that's coming in through several witnesses, and the type of witnesses that Johnson recognizes are particularly prejudicial family members. And the way that this testimony is presented, the lack of an explanation as to why this testimony needs to come in, and the statements that were admitted here, gut, head, heart. I mean, that's not, you know, an explanation as to what the children saw or heard or what their interpretation of Rogers' answers to their questions were. I mean, Rogers didn't answer any of these questions. With respect to Natasha...
That's not the issue, though, is it? The issue is there an explanation for the changed story?
That is the...
Is that a fair question for the state to present evidence about?
That is a fair question, okay. Absolutely.
And with this evidence of people being skeptical of the original explanation... be probative of that issue?
Not in the way it was presented here, no.
Well, let's set aside how it was presented.
Okay.
Would their skepticism of his explanation be probative?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay. What's wrong with presenting their skepticism?
Nothing is wrong with presenting their skepticism.
So it's just the way it was presented here?
It is the way it several reasons.
What was wrong with the way it was presented here?
Again, this isn't a... this isn't testimony that's saying, based on X, Y, and Z, you know, my impression was that, consistent with that, this was a false answer. This is opinion testimony, which Johnson and Alexander make clear, and Montgomery, you know, the witness is saying internally, I reacted this way. I believed this, and I believe that he was guilty.
But each side called an expert to testify.
Sure.
And the state's expert... testified that he thought that the defendant was not being honest in his explanation and in his reason for why he initially came up with other stories. In other words, the state's expert was skeptical that he really intended to kill himself when he accepted $15,000 from the decedent's mother. Doesn't this other evidence go directly to the credibility, the believability of the state's expert, as opposed to the defense expert who reached an entirely different conclusion?
I see that I'm about out of time here, Your Honor, but I think there's a distinction that needs to be made between assessing the credibility and allowing the jury to opine as to the ultimate issue of fact here. Your point is well taken that, yes, the expert testified for the state. You know, I think his actions were inconsistent with someone who was going to commit suicide. That's different than what the witnesses in this case are saying. They're not saying it's a credibility issue. They're saying, I believed he was guilty. And
okay, we'll see you in 10 minutes.
May it please the court, Eric Peterson on behalf of the state of Washington and Skagit County. The state's position here is this case was not about whether or not the defendant actually had strangled his wife. He ended up conceding that through his expert. The case was not about accident versus strangulation. It was what was the defendant's state of mind at the point that this action occurred. And that call came down to essentially the experts providing their opinion about that and their evaluation of what the other evidence that was presented in this case, including the defendant's searching through internet histories, the fact that the defendant had been confronted numerous times by family members about the nature of the allegations, and as Judge Leach was pointing out, other things which were showing that the defendant's story that he'd provided initially was not consistent. And what we have here, and when you're evaluating whether or not there's opinion testimony, there are five factors that you looked at. The type of the witness involved. Now, these are not particular experts. They were civilians, relatives or friends of the defendant. The specific nature of their testimony. And the state's position was that the nature of the testimony was not saying, I believe this person. I disbelieve this person. And even if it was, I think the court recognized, what does it matter when that was actually conceded in the end, that the defense version of the statement that he was giving to these people was false? But it was being offered for the response that the defendant was giving to those particular statements. When the daughter was describing his description that he was giving to her, her response at the end of a long excerpt that I put in the transcript was, but he swore up and down to me for 48 hours that it was the dog, describing the incident with the scratching. So she's not saying, she's describing things in terms of using some I statements, some personal opinions, but what she's doing is showing that in the context of the questioning she's giving of the father and the response given. So the same thing goes on with Nicholas. He was describing the plan for the next day. Now, Nicholas used some terms saying, you know, it was like he was an agenda, like he was describing it for me. But it was not one providing an opinion. What it was describing the context of this was an out of unusual description of the offense.
So when Judge Meyer expressed concern about the nature of the testimony, indicating that he had been awaiting an objection, why didn't the prosecutor say exactly what you just said?
I don't have an explanation for that. I wasn't there, and you get in the heat of the battle in the trial, and if you look at, that's why I put some extensive excerpts in the brief. It was the descriptive nature of what was happening. At the point where the objections actually came down, it was really a very narrow issue. I think it started with William West,
and they kept that.
And that was exactly when the point of that person's opinion is more.
But when I look at that little vignette with Judge Meyer, it appears to me that there's two ways to read what's going on there. The first is the way that defense counsel reads it, which is Judge Meyer was expressing skepticism that this evidence ever should have come in and that it came in just because there wasn't an objection. The other, with the nature of the words he used, is he was concerned that someone later on might think that, and so he was making a statement to prompt the government's lawyer to put on the record why the correct reason why they're doing this and not the other reason. And then when that didn't happen, he just walked away from it, and the issue never arose again. I mean, there's two ways of reading what happened there. Given that he's a 20-year judge that did a lot of work, that's not in the record, but I'm looking at this and I know these things. So,
yeah, I would have wished that we have that kind of foresight to think that judges, when they're asking questions, want us to provide an explanation that helps flesh out the record. And maybe that wasn't in the prosecutor's mind, but if you look at the nature of how the questioning was going on, I think the nature of the questions was they were trying to describe what these people were doing when they were challenging the defendant's assertion. And what it comes down to is this, as I pointed out at the start, this wasn't the issue in the case, and that's one of the factors here. The specific nature of the testimony.
Was in the prosecutor's mind?
Hmm?
Do we really care what was in the prosecutor's mind as long as it was admissible?
I think that the state's position is it was admissible because it was not being offered as opinion evidence at the start. And for that reason, you don't even get to these other issues. But if you look at the evaluation of whether or not this was a proper opinion evidence in this particular case, the last two factors, I think, are the ones that are really significant and controlling here. The nature of the defense, which was not whether or not he didn't strangle his wife, because he acknowledging that it wasn't an accident, like he was trying to explain everyone first. And two, other evidence before the trier of fact about the nature of the case. And that's all the evidence that had to come with respect to the experts. So from what we have in this case, we have an issue that was not contested. And even if this was opinion evidence, which we're not conceding it was in the way it was brought out, it would not have affected the outcome of the case, and therefore the convictions would be affirmed. The court doesn't have any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a couple quick points. You know, the state made an interesting point that it wasn't offered as opinion evidence. The contention we're making here is it really doesn't matter whether it was offered for that purpose or not, because it amounts to improper opinion testimony. And to go back to the issue that we were discussing earlier in my argument, the distinction between a credibility analysis versus an opinion on guilt as to the ultimate issue of fact. That's the contention here. Okay, this is not an analysis by the witnesses of something that they observed or heard or followed up with a question to my client about that led to a credibility determination. They are stating that they believed he is guilty of committing the incident, which is the ultimate issue of fact that this jury needs to decide.
Okay, let me run a scenario by you. Let's say the testimony was a little different. Dad told me that she fell down the stairs accidentally. I looked him in the eye and said, "You're lying." He then said the dog was on the stairs and she tripped over the dog. Would that be admissible?
Well, if I can break that hypothetical down for a few points. One, that's not what happened here. But
well,
two,
that's why it's a hypothetical.
Sure, Your Honor. But
so that's
two,
not a very helpful answer.
I think that in that with respect to her asking a follow-up question and getting a remark, that changes the entire analysis here. Okay, these comments by Natasha, I didn't think I utterly believed him for a moment.
Why, in an abstract way, isn't that exactly what happened here? She didn't believe him, and he offered a second explanation.
Because she's never actually stating during these testimonial comments about opinion that she asked him anything. There's nothing to follow up on. He's not responding to a question.
He had no awareness that people weren't buying his explanation?
That's not at all what I'm suggesting, no.
Well, then what's your point?
My point is that under the testimony in this case, she is expressing, as are all the witnesses, about something they believed internally.
But what they were saying they believe was that he wasn't telling the truth.
What they say is they believe that he was involved in the incident.
They didn't believe what he was saying, and he ultimately admitted that what he was saying to them wasn't true. And I'm trying to figure out what the problem with that evidence is.
Well, again, Your Honor, I think I disagree respectfully with what you're saying about what they did or did not disagree with him about. I mean, here, what they are saying, and I'll read from Natasha's testimony. And if they were fighting, like I literally thought, he could have just pushed her down the stairs. And then moving on to Mark Thompson's testimony, it was a look of, I knew in my head, what did you do, Bill? This isn't an analysis of his credibility regarding the story. This is an internal observation.
Well, it's certainly an analysis. They're concluding that what you just told me can't be right.
Well, what they're saying, Your Honor.
Whether it's visceral or intellectual. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Next up, State versus Giles.